These children, all around 8 or 9 years old, are learning to swim in a pond in rural Bangladesh. And nearby, a group of younger children are singing together in a creche. I'm Mark Whittaker, and I've come to Southeast Asia for this BBC World Service programme, The Silent Epidemic, because scenes like these are still a rarity in this part of the world. And that can have tragic consequences for children who lack supervision and swimming skills.
I was busy with my household chores, so my little daughter was inside the house with me. Then she went outside and I didn't notice. My husband said, "Your child is going out," but I didn't go after her because I was busy.
There's a fast-flowing river only a few yards from Firoja Begum's house, here in the poor village of Guchagram, deep in the Bangladeshi countryside. And she's recalling the terrible day last year when her one-year-old baby daughter crawled out of the door for the last time.
A few minutes later, somebody shouted, "There's a body floating in the water." I looked out and I thought it might be my baby. I just screamed and rushed to the spot and I saw it really was her. Many people came running and pulled her from the water, but she couldn't be revived. She was my first child, and before she was born, I had just lost my mother. So when I had a female baby, I thought, this is my mother, reborn. I really miss my little daughter.
A story like this is repeated some 50 times every day across this country of 150 million people, a country that sprawls across a vast delta formed by the coming together of the great rivers Brahmaputra and Ganges. As a result, much of the landmass is underwater, especially in the rainy season that lasts for several months. But until very recently, these stories of daily tragedy and loss have gone unrecorded and unreported. According to Michael Lenan of the NGO, the Alliance for Safe Children, TASC, it's because they were simply never brought to the authorities' attention.
In drowning, a child is underwater for 3 minutes and they're dead. And once they're dead, there is no reason to take them to the hospital. In the UK, in the United States, and elsewhere, if one of your children dies, you can't bury the child without a death certificate. So there are real incentives to actually record that death with the formal health service in your country. None of those things occur in low and middle income countries. So there are no incentives whatsoever to bringing a child's body to the hospital. And therefore, drowning is for the most part invisible when you look at it from a hospital's perspective.
And what wasn't recorded in hospital wasn't recorded at all. Then, in 2003, a group of local doctors who had long been concerned about the underreporting of deaths in Bangladesh started a countrywide health and injury survey. With assistance from UNICEF, it became the largest of its type in the world, eventually covering some 800,000 people. Dr. Aminur Rahman of the Centre for Injury Prevention and Research Bangladesh, CIPRB, says when they analysed the results, they were astonished by one particular finding.
Obviously, the number of drowning deaths so high when we saw that more than half of the under 18 children's injury-related cause of death is due to drowning. Everybody knew that communicable disease are the main problem in this country, but after infancy, 1 to 17 year cause of death, we saw that drowning is the leading cause. So that was really surprising.
Research in half a dozen other countries has found similar results, and TASC, the Alliance for Safe Children, can now say with a high degree of confidence that the death toll by drowning across Southeast Asia is between 200 and 280,000 children each year. That's about the same as the total number of persons of all ages who drowned in the Asian tsunami of 2004. The question, obviously, is why, when one might expect children who grow up surrounded by water to be taught to swim at an early age and to know about the dangers of rivers and ponds. Neither assumption proved correct, and youngsters between 1 and 4, Amir Rahman argues, are particularly vulnerable.
It's about the lack of supervision. If you go to the rural areas in Bangladesh, almost every household, near the household, there is a water reservoir. It could be a pond, it could be a ditch, it could be riverside. So just a minute's lapse can actually cause a deadly drowning. Mostly the drowning occurs during daytime, basically from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. During that time, mothers are busy with the household chores and the fathers are away from home, either in the field for agricultural activities or their work. And the older children are at school. So there is actually none to look after.
So TASC, which is funded very largely from Australia, has introduced a programme of community village creches, where children aged 1 to 4 can be kept in a safe place, supervised by a teacher. Each creche is called an anshal, the Bengali word for the traditional head covering that forms the upper part of a sari and protects a woman from the sun. This type of anshal, the creche, is also protective, keeping children safe while their mothers get on with the chores at home. This anshal is at the headquarters of a pilot project run by CIPRB in the middle of the Ray Ganj area, about 4 hours' drive north of the capital, Dhaka. It can deal with about 25 children, and it does more than just keep them safe. There's singing, dancing, and basic education about hygiene and the dangers of water and other hazards like cooking fires. About half the 1 to 4 year olds in the area attend an anshal like this one, and their rate of drowning has fallen to just a fifth of what it was before. However, safeguarding the under fours is only one part of the problem. What about older kids? In the nearby village of Shimla, a small group of boys is being taught how to swim in the muddy waters of the local communal pond. It's about 50 metres square with alarmingly steep banks, and it's 2 or 3 metres deep, even close to the edge. The boys, though, are not in the open water, but corralled in a specially designed bamboo platform that forms a sort of open-topped cage to give them confidence and keep them safe while they learn. About 60 or so of these platforms have been provided to villages in this part of Bangladesh over the last 5 years. This is a major part of the SwimSafe programme, devised jointly by TASC and Bangladeshi colleagues. Its methods owe much to the expertise of the Royal Life Saving Society of Australia, whose chief operating officer is Justin Scar. And he says the point in a place like Bangladesh is not to create Olympic champions, but to teach survival swimming.
We know and we understand that the majority of people that we teach through SwimSafe are never going to be interested in the sport of swimming, but they're going to be swimming to keep themselves safe. And in the context of Bangladesh, that was about recognising and thinking about how much swimming ability would be required in order to help people swim themselves out of trouble if they accidentally fell into the water. And so it's designed to teach them to swim around about 20 to 25 metres, teach them to fall in the water and float for as long as it takes to get to safety. Our philosophy is any old stroke as long as it's effective.
After a series of such lessons, each child graduates by showing that they can tread water or float for 30 seconds and swim 25 metres. They're also taught about safe rescue, how to help another child in difficulty by using a stick or a float, such as a plastic bottle, instead of jumping in and quite possibly becoming a second casualty. In another village nearby, we found a 9-year-old boy who might well have drowned had it not been for his slightly older cousin.
I was bathing in a pond with my cousin and some others, and suddenly I slipped and fell into the deeper water. I didn't know how to swim, and I was very frightened, and I thought I was going to drown.
Can you tell me what you saw when your cousin fell into the deep water?
I saw he was waving for help with his hands, and I picked up a stick. There was a lot of bundles beside the pond. I held out the stick and he got hold of it, and I pulled him out.
Did you know what to do? Did you know to get a stick to pull your cousin in and not to jump into the water yourself to try and save him?
Yes, I knew at the time because I was trained up. I was a SwimSafe graduate.
The importance of learning how to swim isn't something that's restricted to rural Bangladesh. Here, in the teeming capital city of Dhaka, I'm at the Lions Aggregati Shika Nikaton School, which has 600 pupils aged between 5 and 15. Single-storey buildings with corrugated iron roofs form a central courtyard, and in one corner of it is a temporary blue plastic swimming pool that's 12.5 metres long by 6 metres wide. It's a gift of the Australian government, and over the past 18 months it's become an integral part of school life here. The female teacher got in first, fully dressed in traditional clothes. The girls are lining up at the back, and here come the boys. They're all wearing trunks down to the knees and also white t-shirts and rubber swimming caps. Teacher has just shown how to kick off and float. Now each of the girls is doing that towards her.
Ready? Ready, go, Asa.
The boys' teacher is just showing them how to do some crawl. Boy coming over. Doing really well, no problem at all. Here's a boy making an immense amount of splash, but really not getting very far, bless him. Having another go. Yeah, he's made it. Several mothers are watching their children with evident pride. Even though there is less hazardous water around the place in Dhaka than in the rural areas, drowning is still a serious problem. For one thing, some 80% of families return to their home villages in the country during festivals such as Eid. But also, where there is a lake in the city, its shores will soon be taken over by makeshift shanties, many built on poles over the water. At a community centre in a poor district of Dhaka, the site of another portable pool, everyone has heard of drownings at a local lake, and some have been touched personally by them.
I had three friends, and one day, 3 or 4 months ago, they didn't go to school. They went to the lake instead, and it's very deep, like 25 metres. One of them fell into the water. Then another one tried to rescue him, and they were both drowning. So the third boy went into the water to rescue the other two, but they all drowned together. My mother had told me to go to school, so I wasn't with them. And when I came home from school, I heard they were dead. We started in the same class, and we always played together, so I miss my friends a lot.
None of these children had been through the SwimSafe programme. For those who do, there is already robust evidence that both it and the Anshul programme are saving a lot of lives. A UNICEF report published last May reviewed the evidence gathered by Bangladeshi scientists who surveyed tens of thousands of children who had been through these programmes and similar numbers who had not, and concluded...
Fatal drowning rates in children who participated in the SwimSafe intervention were 93% lower than non-participating children in the control group. Also, drowning death rates in children who attended the Anshul creche were 82% lower than non-attending control children. These are both large and statistically significant reductions.
Dhaka is now home to the world's first international drowning research centre. But Bangladesh is certainly not the only Southeast Asian country where drowning is a leading cause of child death. And it's not even where the problem was first identified. That was here in Vietnam, thanks in large part to a former US fighter pilot, Pete Peterson, who was shot down and held as a prisoner of war in Hanoi for 6 years. After his repatriation, further military service, and then 6 years in Congress, he returned to Vietnam as America's first ambassador following the normalization of diplomatic relations between the two countries in the mid-90s.
I saw the need, as I traveled around Vietnam, for some way to shut off the number of patients going into the very ill-equipped and sparse health system within Vietnam. You'd walk into a clinic and there'd be 4 or 5 children sleeping in one bed. Everybody felt that that was quite normal. The problem was that they were just overwhelmed with numbers of people. And then the other observation was that a lot of those children shouldn't be there because they were accident victims from accidents that could clearly be prevented if there had been a safety culture, if you will.
So Peterson, along with Mike Linan, then a health attaché at the US Embassy in Hanoi, and local public health officials, carried out a pioneering survey of child mortality. And it showed, just as later research in Bangladesh would do, that the leading causes were not diseases, but accidental injury, and in particular, drowning. It was this that led to the creation of the Alliance for Safe Children, which has taken its Swim Safe programs to Cambodia, China, Indonesia, and the Philippines, as well as Bangladesh, and of course, here in Vietnam. I'm Mark Whittaker, reporting for the BBC World Service on the tragic toll of child drownings in Southeast Asia. And I've come to Da Nang, a name made famous as a US Marine and Air Force base during the Vietnam War. It's now a growing and rapidly modernising city, and, like in much of the country, water is everywhere. It is a port, after all. There are ponds, ditches, a major river, and the sea. But you won't see any children here learning to swim in a muddy village pond. As Justin Scar explains, they had to be sensitive to local feelings.
When we went to East Asia, we found that the community members, the mothers particularly, weren't really very supportive of having their children swimming in these muddy water locations. And so we developed an idea that's based around very large, portable, above-ground swimming pools. And we've been trialling that in Vietnam for several years now, and also Thailand, and the communities have really embraced these above-ground portable swimming pools.
The SwimSafe project in Da Nang is overseen by Ross Cox. He's American, but his staff is all local. And their work is helped greatly by the central place of education in Vietnamese culture.
Kids here are highly institutionalized, meaning virtually 100% are in the school system. You've met a few of our instructors, and they tend to be young primary school teachers or middle school teachers. They're still very enthusiastic because they have a background in sports training academically and are qualified in that. They've made very good teachers. They already knew how to teach. Some of them were already interested in swimming, and they recognize water safety is an issue for kids.
In Da Nang, there are many dangerous places, lots of rivers and ditches, and the sea. So many years ago, a pupil going home from this school did die of drowning. At that time, there was no swim safe here, and the child's awareness wasn't high. He had an older brother. On their way home, they crossed a drainage ditch, and both fell in the water. The older brother knew how to swim, and he survived, but the younger brother couldn't swim, so he drowned. I was a teacher at the time, and I was very upset. So I want to do anything we can to help the kids to know about the dangers and to teach them about drowning prevention.
So say all the PE teachers that I've spoken to in Vietnam. And a growing body of evidence, including most recently a landmark paper from Bangladesh in a leading paediatric journal, testifies to the effectiveness of these approaches to combating it, and all at a cost per life saved comparable to vaccination against disease. So it's surprising to learn that drowning prevention is still available to only a minority of children in half a dozen countries across the region. And in many, there is nothing at all. One might question whether their governments could do more, even though they are undoubtedly poor countries, Bangladesh especially. But for Justin Scar, the real responsibility lies with the international public health community.
We've had a lot of work to do in terms of convincing the international public health community that drowning is an issue. The medical system is geared towards what happens in hospitals, or they save lives through large-scale immunisation programs, and they've been saving millions of lives for decades now and have been very successful at that. But actually looking at interventions at a community level is not necessarily the skill set of the World Health Organization. And so we're hopeful that by having our research published in very large, high-factor journals, such as Pediatrics recently, we're able to educate the public health community about how effective child drowning prevention can be and how it can be integrated into the other community development and child health programs that have been highly successful across the globe.
It's a point we put to the World Health Organization in Geneva, whose primary function is advising governments on their health strategies. Child drowning is one of the responsibilities of David Meddings in the Department of Violence and Injury Prevention there. He's impressed by the work of TASC and its partners and the research that's just been published by the Centre for Injury Prevention and Research Bangladesh. But he insists that the WHO has to be cautious.
It's an important paper, without question, because it's the first large-scale study of a cohort of children who have received what we would call a multi-level intervention. And that simply hasn't been reported upon before with this number of participants in the study and this degree of observational oversight. As the authors point out in the paper themselves, there is never in epidemiology any one study that cinches an argument. The authors call in the paper themselves for replication of this work in other settings. But one of the very practical issues that does make it more difficult for us to enlarge upon this work is the lack of donors who are ready to recognize that drowning and indeed other injuries to children has become a leading killer of children. There's a certain tendency for traditional donors of public health programming to look upon child survival very much as an issue of addressing the same sort of public health threats which reigned in the early 80s when the so-called child survival revolution really began. And we have had a bit of an uphill struggle in convincing international development agencies who support child health initiatives to enlarge the scope of programming that they are willing to support.
We would have liked to ask the Gates Foundation why it has been such a struggle. They are the biggest private donor in global health and the one that others tend to follow. However, they declined our invitation to take part in this programme. The WHO hope that other donors will finance a number of similar projects over the next few years to provide sufficient evidence for them to recommend that governments introduce drowning prevention programmes for all children. That, for Mike Linnan of TASC, would open up the ultimate prospect of solving the problem for good.
Now that we've shown that the cost of preventing that drowning death it's identical to the cost of any of the other leading killers, now we need to extend the child survival revolution to cover drowning. And it's the only thing which is going to continue to drive down child mortality in low and middle income countries for the next 15 and 20 years. And now it's incumbent on the government and the donors and interested other parties to take this forward and create a national program. We think that over 10 years, you could literally reduce the child drowning rate in Bangladesh by 50%. And 10 years after that, it would be just an incidental killer. It wouldn't be a leading killer.
It's to be hoped that that is the case, and that in time, the only sounds to be heard from the pools and ponds across Southeast Asia will be of children enjoying themselves safely in water that is a source of pleasure rather than of fear. I'm Mark Whittaker, and I've been telling the story of Southeast Asia's silent epidemic of child drownings. It was a Square Dog Radio production by Mike Halley for the BBC World Service.